If someone needs help, Portland's going to be there for you.
From the Coin Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
Howdy.
How are you?
I'm good. I apologize. I'm running late. I was just posting a video about the new viral term, Chuggy. It's the latest thing that teens on like TikTok and Instagram are using to describe uncool adults such as myself.
Oh, I'll fall into that category then.
Probably. It's anything it's anything that used to be cool like 5 to 10 years ago that's no longer cool now, but like you still follow that trend. So all of my remnants of like college style and different things that I get at like TJ Maxx and Home Goods, it all makes me Chuggy.
Chuggy.
Yeah.
Is that a combo word?
No, it's like entirely made up. Like some teen made it up like a couple years ago and it has gone viral this last month on TikTok. And now there are things like Instagram accounts called Chug Life that post pictures of things that the youths have deemed Chuggy. It's spelled C-H-E-U-G-Y. It is fun to say.
It is kind of fun to say.
Chuggy. I know that was probably a hard 90 degree turn from where you thought this conversation was going to go.
Probably. Are you rolling?
Yeah, I hit record from the beginning.
Okay, sweet.
Just in case, but feel free to start over with whatever you actually wanted to talk about.
Oh, well, we got to start here. My take on French fries last week drew some ire from some of our listeners. I was not. I may have been uninvited to the cool kids' French fry parties.
Oh, yeah. I feel that your ranking of Burger King was a bit off base. I'll say that.
I'll stand by it. As you hear the weakness sink into my voice a little bit, no, I'll stand by it.
Ultimately, it's your fries. It's what you want to snack on. So I just know that if I go get French fries now, you won't be trying to mooch any of my lunch. So there you go.
It's not that I dislike other fries.
Maybe it's that other people won't be trying to mooch your fries. No one else wants your BK fries.
Maybe in my less healthy days, that was my whole strategy with the Burger King fries. Nobody else would steal them.
That was your plan all along.
Apparently, hot takes about French fries get about as many people upset and fired up as hot takes about sports.
Mm.
Yeah. Did you play sports growing up?
I did. So I say that. I guess with a bit of a caveat, did I play sports growing up? Yes. Did I play sports growing up well? No, not really. I was that kid who I went through this cycle of like I would try something for a couple years. And that first year, everyone's learning it. So it's okay if you're not great. And then that second season, everyone else is getting the hang of it. And yeah, Emily's still trying. I did this with volleyball, basketball, soccer. And for a couple years, I think I gave soccer the most effort because my dad was actually my coach for a couple seasons.
I was what do we want to call it? Small town Montana, small time star, which means absolutely nothing.
Nice.
I had a decent high school football career and rode a lot of the bench in basketball, so I got a really good seat to some of the games.
There you go. After a couple years of playing soccer, not only was it difficult to have my dad be my coach, and, you know, that led to many extended talks long after the game about what I could have done better on the field, but we learned after a couple years that I was just not cut out for it. When I would apologize trying to take the ball away from the other team and say things like, excuse me, I'm sorry, oh, thank you, running and swimming, two non-contact sports, proved to be a better fit for me.
I didn't know much about soccer until I decided I was moving to Portland, and my then girlfriend, now wife, bought me a Timbers sweatshirt. It was their debut season in MLS, and I watched their first home game on TV, and right away fell in love with that crowd at Providence Park. Even through that television broadcast, when that King of Clubs tifo went up, I felt like I was home, even though I had never been there. Have you been to a Timbers or a Thorns game?
I haven't. And I feel bad saying that. I moved here at the end of 2018, and then my first full year here in 2019, the whole year I said, I can't wait to go to a Timbers game or a Thorns game. And it's like on my list and maybe next year. And then 2020 happened. So it is still on my list.
That atmosphere is just so cool. And to see what they can pull in for a women's professional sporting event is just astonishing. They draw more home fans now than the NBA or the NHL averages for a home game. The idea that there are more people attending a women's soccer game in Portland than attend the average NBA game or the average NHL game, it blows me away. And I think that's why I got such a joy out of talking to Thorns head coach Mark Parsons this week, because he really, really expressed what that crowd can do and what the support in Portland can do for that team and for, you know, people like his daughter. He laid it out in a way that I hadn't heard it before. And to talk to somebody that's on the field for those games and can hear it, you know, long after the game is over, it was amazing. And the man, it's apparent, truly loves being here in Portland.
That was one of the first things that I noticed when I moved here. I was so struck by how much support and just seeing it around town, seeing people wearing all their different gear. You know, it was equal in scope, the Thorns and the Timbers. And I was like, wow, there has to be something really special about this team that they, you know, do so well here. And I think it goes both ways. There is something very special about this team and the athletes that we have on the field. They are incredible. There's also something very special about this city and this community that they step up to support. And it was really, really fun to listen to your conversation and to hear that that's reflected back in the team and the passion that everybody from the top down brings to the game.
His love for this city is palpable. You can hear it in his voice. And he describes it in so many great ways. I just find it kind of funny that if you want to know what's great about Portland, I mean, we all know what's great about Portland and what we love about Portland. But if you want to know what's great about Portland, or if you want to get a refreshing look at what's great about Portland, all you have to do is ask an Englishman.
It is a refreshing perspective from across the pond, but I'm certainly glad that he feels so at home here.
Hello, Coach Mark Parsons.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Are we on video or not?
Don't need to be. I see you're in a very, very pretty white room there.
No, yeah. The non-video works because everywhere I turn, there's something on the wall. I haven't organized this. My daughter drew some stuff on the whiteboard and I don't want to rub it off yet. I enjoy reading it in the morning. So yeah, go ahead.
Born in England, what's your first soccer memory?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to have a nice chat with you. And you've dived straight into a great question that is going to open me up and take me back to some incredible memories. I don't have one distinctive one. I feel like I'm playing in my front yard and I've smashed windows and I've smashed ornament on the side of the garden. So I kind of had those memories when I was young, but also my first experience of ever seeing a professional player. There was someone told, I read it in a newspaper or someone told me that we could go and watch Chelsea Football Club practice. And I didn't understand how could we watch them practice, and begged my dad. I was like, this, we could drive. And it was, you know, an hour drive into London, which seemed like, you know, flying to Australia at the time seemed like a long, long way away to drive into London. You got to just park up, walk out and watch training. And I talked my dad into doing it. He managed to make some time off work and we went up and watched Chelsea Football Club train. And I remember Ruud Gullit, it's a Dutch player, big dreadlocks, came over to Chelsea and was just an absolute superstar. Just had so much class and swagger. Reminds me of what Diego Valeri has done coming to Portland, Christine Sinclair with the Thorns. And watched them train. I can't believe it. I'm literally on the other side of the white paint watching them train 5 feet, 10 feet, 50, you know, 20 feet away on this pitch. And after training, the players would just walk past and say hi to the fans, and 20 fans or 30 fans had watched training that day. And Ruud Gullit walked past me as the first one. And I was just, you know, it's like it's Jay-Z or Obama or whoever, the someone who's just larger than life, someone that I adore. And here is this footballer that I've seen on the TV, this superstar, absolute world superstar. Today it'd be like, you know, walking past Messi or Ronaldo. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was in the same place as this team, my team that I support, but these players and many others obviously walk past me, but just remember him. So smashing things in my garden, or going to watch Chelsea train and seeing Ruud Gullit walk past me, who was God to me at the time.
Were you a fan of Chelsea before you went to that training, or did you fall in love with Chelsea there?
Well, I got two stories about how it was way before, two quick stories. My dad supported Man United and still does, and the Portland Thorns. It was 94, so I was 8 years old, 94, Man United. So I supported Man United because my dad did, but they were playing Chelsea in a cup final. And I wanted to shout against my dad on the sofa at home. So there I was, couldn't wait. I'm going to shout against my dad. I'm a Chelsea fan for this game. And 15 minutes, I conk out, I fall asleep. I wake up 88th minute, 89th minute. I'm like, oh my God, what's happened? Who, you know, who's winning? And Man United are winning 4-1. So my dad is like, yeah, this is what happens when you try and change teams. You know, you get beat. You need to stay with Man United. And I said, you know what? I think I'm going to stay with Chelsea. So I am a bit stubborn. And I think right then at 8 years old, I showed that. I was like, all right, they lost today, but Chelsea's going to be my team. And I'm not going to, you know, just join Man United, come back to Man United because they won. And I'm going to believe in Chelsea. Second reason was a young kid that I'd met around the same time, that like that week, he had a Chelsea jersey and he showed me it. And I'd never seen a jersey before, like a real jersey, and held it. And I was like, wow. And he was wearing it. I was like, oh, cool. They play Man United. And so those two things put me on a journey, 8 years old, to support Chelsea Football Club and have a look back.
Well, Chelsea plays a big role in your early coaching career that got started in England. You spent some time as the head coach of the Chelsea Ladies Reserve. How does a kid from England who's coaching in Chelsea land a job in the United States?
2007, I came with Chelsea. The first team, the men's first team, would come on tour and they visit different parts of the world, and they came to LA. I came out as a community coach, a grassroots coach, or an academy coach to do clinics while the first team was here to prepare for the season. So Jose Mourinho was a coach, just been there for a year or two. And I came to America and I was the age of 21. I was doing coach clinics in front of directors of coaching, in front of college coaches. And at the time, it's crazy. And I probably didn't really know what I was doing at all. But because I had Chelsea badge, people were listening. And and what hit me there in 2007 was at 21, wow, this country is very, very serious about youth development and about soccer development. And they invest a lot of money and infrastructure in trying to develop players. At the same time, I saw a real need for more quality and more, let's say, real quality. So the marketplace here is, if you just want to work in youth soccer and make a lot of money, you absolutely can. And people have done that for a long time, which has meant that the youth game hasn't developed as much as it should. So what I saw is people willing to invest and people really willing to develop youth players. And there is resources to do that. There is facilities to do that. And with more quality and more leadership and better coaching, you can have a massive influence, because people weren't focusing on the coaching and focusing on the quality. And some of my experiences when I visited, I just found myself, wow, if I ever had the opportunity to come here, I really think I can have an impact. So that's 2007. My wife traveled to America with her job. I traveled out here in 2007, 2008, 2009, West Coast, also Hawaii. And it was 2010, beginning of 2010, where me and my wife said, and we'd love to live in America. And we were getting married early in that year. And I gave Chelsea kind of 6 months heads up. It's like, look, I really want to go to America. Me and my wife would love to go and coach and would love to keep a relationship. It's something that we really want to do. Decided to go on the East Coast. We had some friends, a couple of friends, two family friends that we knew in Virginia or in the DC area. So that's where we started. And I moved over and ran a very small youth club in Culpeper, Virginia, called Culpeper Soccer Association. And I wouldn't be here today without them and those people and the people there that took me and my wife in as family. And so what I thought would happen did happen. It was a place that really wanted to help develop the soccer in this very rural town and small town. They really wanted to give their community better in youth soccer. And they let me do that. They let me go. And I made lots of mistakes. And I did a lot of things well. And with the support of a community-ran club, I was able to recruit coaches out of everywhere, recruiting them out of the local supermarket and teaching them to coach. I was recruiting them off, you know, their parent coaches, and I was getting them in and training them. And in a very quick, short time, we made a massive difference. And that's what I love about America, that when people care about something, they really invest, they really go and they really give and they want the best for their kids. And I love the experience of working with such great people that really developed and pushed on in their coaching to give the kids the best that they could in that area. And yeah. And then from there, just then it becomes a whirlwind. I very quickly got back to pro soccer. Opportunity with Washington Spirit or DC United Women, then Washington Spirit, and then Portland, and here we are. You know, kind of took a couple of years off from the elite level because I wanted to settle down in America, and then missed it dearly. And you know, someone opened a window crack, and I jumped through it and got back into the elite side.
When you first got back into the elite side in Washington DC, what were your first impressions of the women's soccer game in the United States, and how was it different from what you were part of in Chelsea?
When I saw the North, you know, I don't want to just say American, the North American players here, the Americans, Canadians, lots of Canadians over here in college. When I saw them play and train and compete, college women's college soccer, or even girls club soccer, is another world. And I'd seen it a little bit when I was in England. We'd played a couple of American teams. The commitment, the mentality, the sacrifice. I absolutely loved being around. It's just these guys, these players are just from a different planet and world that I was used to in England. You know, England's still developing the women's football and they've now moved on quite a bit, but the US is just light years ahead of everyone and continue. I don't think the gap's getting smaller. I think it's either staying the same or getting bigger. And my first real experience was DC United Women under 20s. It was just a bunch of high school kind of college, a couple of college kids playing in a tournament, you know, playing in the summer Super Y League, the U20 League. And we grabbed a bunch of individuals, and I've never seen a group so quickly become a team. And we were supposed to be just trying to have a fun summer. We ended up going to a national final. And losing 1-0 to a team stacked with players of, you know, college juniors and college seniors. And I had high school kids, Colorado team, you know, lots of professional players that went on to play professional in the NWSL. And we, I think one or two of that U20 group maybe have played professional since. It's just fun. I just loved that the American female player wants to give everything they possibly can, do anything to improve, to learn, to grow. And then you get a taste of the elite, the real top professionals, and I see Washington Spirit come into town, and Ali Krieger, Diana Matheson, Ashlyn Harris, start to see what top players look like. And now I you know, as I'm talking this through, what I thought was amazing at U20, and then I see the senior player, and now I work with Lindsay Horan, Christine Sinclair. It's mind-boggling. It blows my mind. Crystal Dunn, the quality of players I've had a privilege to work with and spend time with.
First two seasons after you're promoted to manager of the first team in DC, you make the playoffs. What was it like to find success early on in your NWSL head coaching career?
I felt at the time, I felt like we should have done more and could have done more and achieved more. And I should be seeing it going, it was amazing. But the reality is I just always want more and would love to take some of those, you know, take those years back that we achieved those special results. No one's done it since. No one did it before. No one's done it since. No one has finished rock bottom and then made the playoffs in the most competitive league in the world. And we didn't just make playoffs. People said it was lucky the first year. And then we made playoffs again. And then the following year, I moved on to Portland and the team made it to the championship. And, you know, we had this horrific 4-3 game in overtime against West New York Flash here. We were millimeters away from my new team playing my old team, which would have been very, very scary, but fun and unique at the same time. At the time, I wish we should have won the semifinal in 2014. Seattle, we had them on the ropes. A couple of decisions didn't go our way. We should have won that game, gone to a championship. So we would have gone from rock bottom to the championship game. Incredible. And we didn't. That second playoff year, yeah, we should have hosted a home playoff. We dropped off near the end of the year and we should have hosted a home playoff. We fell short. We got smashed in the semifinal. We were 3-0. We should have lost 6-0. We were very bad to get to Seattle again. So incredible achievement. But I wish I could go back with the experience and knowledge I have now. We could have even pushed on even further. So it was magical times. And yeah, I wish I could have given the team a little bit more.
You've had some success in Washington in late 2015. You get this phone call and you're going to be the next head coach of the Portland Thorns. When you got the job here in Portland, what did you know about the club and the city at that point?
It was more about the club. And I'd been here to travel. We get our schedule in Washington. I check for two things. When are we traveling to Portland? And when's our first home game? In that order. That's how amazing, incredible the opportunity to play in Portland as the away team. It was the first thing I looked for. When are we going? I think I played here probably two or three times, maximum three or four times. And one of my last experiences with Washington in 15, near the end of the season, people were camping outside for, you know, the day before to be able to have tickets. And it was going to be sold out, 21,000 at the time. And pulling up at the game, seeing people had been queuing and camping, is just the most surreal, incredible feeling, emotion in the world. And we get to play in this stadium. Portland's a great team and we get to be part of this fan base. So I just thought the team represented excellence. Thought the team represented, the club represented how to support the female athlete like an athlete, a pro athlete, not just a male or female, but an athlete. And they continue to do that. And this fan base, best in the world, and just so committed to their team. And I come back from this trip at the end of 15 season with, you know, I haven't had the phone call yet. And I said to my wife, we've got to go out. Do we go West Coast, LA? Do we go to see our friends in Hawaii? And we got to try and stop in Portland. I just want you to see it. You know, all I had managed to do was go train, go to the game, grab a coffee here and there. I didn't really get to see much, but I really wanted my wife to see it. And then got the phone call, I know a week or 2 weeks after the season, and got the phone call from Gavin. I thought it was about a trade. I got off the phone and said, well, don't know if we need to go on holiday to Portland anymore, love, to my wife. She said, what do you mean? He said, well, Gavin wants us on a flight to go and talk to them. She's like, talk about what? I'm like, talk about us moving to Portland. She's like, oh, wow. So we were thinking about a vacation stop in Portland to really experience it. And then we got a phone call about living and moving here. So it's mind-blowing. One of the best phone calls I've ever had to this day. Every day I get to spend in this club, in this community, in this place is... just feels like a gift. Feels like a gift to me, a gift to my wife, and a gift to my daughter. I just think it's been a gift that we've been able to live in this community and be in this part of the world for the last coming up to 5.5, 6 years now.
I want to get into the message that's available to young girls and girls like your daughter here in Portland in just a second. But just on the soccer side, 2016, that first season, you win the Supporters' Shield for the best record, but lose a home playoff game. And then comes this magical season of 2017. What lessons did you and the team take from that 2016 season that fueled the run to the NWSL championship in 2017?
So I can sit here and tell you that I got all these lessons and I crafted this, all this energy into the 2017. Anyone in our team, on staff or on the players that lived what 16 was and that day, that semi-final, the pictures from it, the still pictures when people were just absolutely sitting on the floor and you know, the place has gone silent. No one knows, like no one. We were 4-3 down with 1 minute left. There was not a thought in my mind we weren't winning that game at any point until the whistle went and it was like, huh? What do you mean? It's over. There's no way this is over. We are winning today. And I felt like the stadium and every player and every staff member felt that way. I wish I could tell you I crafted the magical 70. Anyone that was there had an inner drive was born, and you know, this fire inside every individual was lit. And we could have done really bad soccer and really bad tactics and try to fail the next year. It wasn't going to happen. There was too much. When that many people want to achieve a goal, it's going to happen. And for me personally, I had the picture of that day up a lot, and I just knew that I never ever wanted to leave a stone unturned where I give the chance for players to feel the way they felt that day. Credit to Western New York Flash, where they came in and just caused absolute chaos. We weren't at our absolute best. There was also some horrific decisions that don't, you know, referees don't often impact the result. They can impact momentum, but they don't often impact result. That's probably the only game in my coaching career where they consistently impacted the result throughout the game. And it's just hard, really hard to take. Felt destiny to go and win it. Then actually, what are the lessons? And I think no stone unturned was the lesson. Before the game, I was unsure if we'd done enough for the long throw. I printed everything out that gets stuck up on the whiteboard, and one page didn't print. It was the long throw page. And then that made me reprint it. And then I was like, have we done enough preparation? Are we ready for their long throw? And kept it the same. Didn't think of anything of it. And the long throw caused chaos all game. Big, very involved in, I think, at least two of their goals, maybe. And afterwards, like, oh my God, you know, you think someone else is always trying to help and keep an eye on you. Why didn't that one page print? And it tried to get me focused on that maybe we weren't as good as we thought we were in this area. Or I'm just making this all up, right? It's just a print that decided to jam then. But yeah, it's no stone unturned. I think we made some adjustments all over the place that every area of our game, we were going to be detailed and thorough. And I was, if I had to keep a team in for 10 more minutes, 20 minutes more minutes longer than they wanted at any point in the whole year, because that would get us prepared, we were going to do it. And the following year, yeah, it was a special year. There was a drive and an energy that I'd never seen amongst the group. And I even if I tried to get us to fail, the players drove us that year. I just needed to stay out their way. They were too determined. Everyone had too much pain. And it really drove us in a positive way to push boundaries like we never have before. And it was an incredibly fun year.
You signed a new contract this offseason, and you've talked a lot in our conversation here about your love for Portland. Since you moved here, off the field, what have you come to love about being in this city?
So I talk about it with the team a little bit. I talk about it when people ask me about Portland. It's just there is a community feeling. If someone needs help, Portland's going to be there for you. And I think of women's soccer, show the world how they can be, should be supported. Portland is there for you. George Floyd's death last year. Most cities protest for a night or two or for a week or two. And Portland is out there for 100 nights. And in the picture, and the picture of the mums being out there, and make sure their voices are heard. Portland as a community really wants to support people, male, female, people from all over the world. They really want to see people succeed. And then you just got this, you know, you step away from that. I think for me and my wife, you know, it's America, but there's a lot of European feel to it. Yes, you get your normal shops you get in every other city of America, but you also get a lot of very unique places, unique shops, unique restaurants. You can be at the beach, you can be at the mountain, you can hike. And yeah, I think the simplest way is just people in Portland are just different. It's just an amazing community. And yeah, we've made some special friends for life. that I'm just grateful that we've had the opportunity to meet and see this part of the world. And for my daughter, who's been able to see a mountain or a beach within an hour, hour and a bit, been able to witness and be a part of this, what, how this team supports women's soccer. It just brings me so much joy. And how did I stumble, as we talk through my journey on this podcast, how did I stumble to a place which I, you know, if I kind of drew in my dreams, where would I want my family to be or my daughter to be growing up? You know, I wouldn't know the word Portland, the name Portland, but I'd be describing a place just like Portland. And here we are. And I'm just grateful that we have the opportunity.
When we come back, we'll hear more about the amazing atmosphere at Providence Park for Thorns games and the important message Mark Parsons says it sends to young girls.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Your daughter has come up a lot in our conversation. You obviously enjoy being a girl dad. And like you mentioned, you have this opportunity to coach a team that plays in front of 20,000 fans on average when they play at home. What kind of impact do you think those huge crowds and that kind of support has on the next generations of women and girls like your daughter?
Oh, it's huge. And you know, we'll see. She's 7. Does she want to play soccer? Does she want to dance? Does she want to sing? She's just got so many interests and hobbies and just loves people and loves interaction. Be interested to see what she does. So, you know, she has such an entitlement. She has grown up thinking the female gets supported like this everywhere. That's her reality. It's just not true. And she, in that privilege that she has, she actually gets to go and spread that wherever she goes now for the rest of her life. She knows one standard, and that's 21,000 or now 25,000 people supporting a female women's soccer team or supporting University of Portland the way that they do down there or whatever it is. I think boys, I think girls, I think men, I think women, I think young, I think old. People come to this stage, it's so inspiring and shows you what's possible and what should be happening. And the influence of role models and the influence of seeing superstars on a field, on a pitch, being able to see it and believe in it is so powerful. I talked about my experience. Like I love football my life. But when I saw these players, Mark Hughes, Luca Viali, Rude Hullet, when I saw them in person and I'd never been to a game to get tickets to, like I somehow conned my dad into taking me to this training ground. And then, you know, it was a year later that I saw an advert in a newspaper about Chelsea tickets, general sale for a League Cup game. So obviously struggling to sell tickets. And I sat, went, got back from school for an hour or two a night before my dad got back from work, just redialing the phone number for tickets. But it'd always be engaged because someone's buying a ticket. And I did it in one week, night one, phoning for an hour, hour and a half, night two, hour, hour and a half. And then it rang, you know, and I panicked and hung up. It'd take me two nights to get through and I hung up. And then told my dad what happened. He was like, well, how are you going to pay for it if we get through? And I tried again that late that night. We got through. We didn't have a credit card. So we got through, and the only way to pay is by credit card over the phone for a ticket. So then we tried the next night. It's now night four, maybe, and to borrow my next door neighbor's credit card. And we got through, we booked tickets, and I went to my first game at 9 years old to Stamford Bridge. Now I got to see these players on under the lights. The power of that was unbelievable, seeing those stars. So seeing what Christine Sinclair, Megan Klingenberg, AD French, Emily Menges, what the impact these players will have on boys, girls, men and women across the community and US from the nights in Portland and the days in Portland, the games in Portland. Yeah, I've lived it. I know how magical that is. Also, big responsibility obviously comes with them being elite athletes and modeling what special people can be and can achieve. But the thing is, I'm going to a men's game and watching when I'm young and seeing a men's, it was kind of more normal here. You come in and see a women's team, 21,000 or now 25,000. I love being a part of someone coming here for the first time. I get to talk to them before, and then I've got a game, and then I get to see them after, and listening to them after, being absolutely blown away by the experience. And the other part is, and this shouldn't matter. I go back to England every Christmas, but I haven't gone back to Stamford Bridge for, 10, 12 years. 2018, I grabbed three or four tickets, took my dad, took my father-in-law. We went and watched a game at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea men against Bournemouth, maybe. And after living the Thorns atmosphere, obviously feeling, seeing the Timbers atmosphere, I couldn't wait to watch this game. And Stamford Bridge is amazing, and the atmosphere will be amazing. I'm telling you now, Ian, it was the most depressing night, and I burst a bubble of what I thought was a special stadium, a special atmosphere. It's flat, it was dead, there's no one singing. This is how it's always been, but I never knew that. This was the dream for me. And now I've been here listening to 20,000 riveters singing their hearts out. 2018, when we lost 3-0 in the championship, singing for 30 minutes after the whistle for Portland Thorns and for this team, just nothing will ever come close. And now what I thought was the dream back at Stamford Bridge is quiet, is dull, is depressing. It's like, guys, I almost wanted to pick up the people that were singing and thinking they were doing a good job. I wanted to pick them up and bring them back and see a Thorns game and go, guys, this is how you support your team. And I appreciate it, living it live, but then going back and feeling and seeing what I thought was special, it burst a bubble, and I realized that this place is the most unique place in the world, and that the history of soccer in this city, with Timbers going back so far, Pele playing his last game, with the players that have come out of UP, the success that they've had, Clive Charles and many other greats that have come through, such a massive impact on soccer in this community. It's incredible. And a place that I know at some point in 20, 30 years, I'll be sitting there telling someone, yeah, I used to coach in Portland. And they're like, no way, no chance. Like, yeah, I used to live there and it was amazing. No way you did. That's one of the best places. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I lived it. Yeah, okay. I'll be the old guy in the pub, coffee shop, sharing, trying to share my memories, and no one will believe me. It's special. And I'm grateful for every day that I'm here.
Mark, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with me. I've got a couple quick fire questions, and if you feel like passing on these, you can pass. I'm not looking to get you into any trouble. What's the worst thing you've ever said to a referee?
Oh, that's terrible. So I got sent off 2 or 3 weeks ago of game. I think it was game one near the end, and it was the least I've ever said. I actually wasn't shouting. I think it was karma. I said this is effing embarrassing. This is effing embarrassing. Not at anyone, not directed, but I think they already had enough of me. So the referee came over. The referee was dealing with a serious incident and came over. And I thought she was going to come and tell me to calm my team down. And she said, you're off. So that was one thing that, and by the way, that doesn't help anyone. Doesn't help me. Doesn't help my team. And I, I don't think there's a place to ever to do that. I think so. That was recently. I think the worst thing I've ever did was I gave a souvenir to a referee. I wanted to make sure, just a souvenir from that stadium. I said, "Oh, here's a souvenir because I don't want you to forget your magnificent performance that you had today." that didn't go down too well. The sarcasm was a bit too strong. And that would be up there as, yeah, again, just me being selfish. Like when you do that, you know, when it's me just being selfish. I just want to be want to let some emotion out. It doesn't help. I'm not thinking clearly. It doesn't help anyone. That would be up there. Hopefully that's not too bad. I think a lot of people would have done and said a lot worse.
I've said a lot worse, and I'm just a fan. Big win at Providence Park. You, your wife, your daughter are going out to eat after the game. Where are you going?
Oh, yeah. Amazing. We used to go to a right near our house. We used to go to this local little Thai restaurant after a big win. And then we moved and we're a little bit closer to the city, which is 12 minutes outside the city. You're taking me back to 2019 now, because that's the last time that we were able to do. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I remember, you know, we had a big win and we're so happy. We went to this restaurant, had an amazing burger, St. Jack's, maybe. I think it's called St. Jack's. Not sure. So can't be precise. We love to go and have, well, after a big win, we love to go and have a nice meal. And when we've had a good win, I like a very good burger. I've probably been healthy and not and try to be sensible, but then it's nice to let loose. And I'm a bit boring. I don't drink, and me having a nice big cheeseburger or something is me being naughty. So
who's the tougher professional athlete, men or women?
It's not even close. It's female athletes. They have more barriers. They have more obstacles. They have more people trying to push them down every single day. And the fact that they still make it as a professional. Meanwhile, the male athlete has the opposite. They're the red carpet and everyone's trying to help and everyone's trying to support and everyone's trying to give. Yeah, it's not even close.
And with that, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks for letting me talk.
Emily, you heard it throughout that interview. It came up in almost every answer to every question I asked after his career brought him stateside, that Portland was front of mind to him, that he was developing a love for Portland and a love for the Thorns and a love for this community even before he got here, that's only grown since he's been here.
That's something that's so cool to hear, because I think for some people, you know, coaching, it is a job, it is a career. And I'm sure there are coaches out there who have taken opportunities and moved to programs that maybe it wasn't a place that they necessarily wanted to live. And they're moving for the career opportunity, just like many of us do. But it's just so heartwarming to hear that in Mark's case, he really, you know, was excited to be here and has grown to love Portland. I think that's, you know, reflected in just how much this team gives to this city every time they step on the pitch.
I thought one of the most powerful things he said to me in that interview was his line, "If you need help, Portland's going to be there for you." I don't think he was just referencing a person or people, but entire movements, and he was specific to bring up George Floyd's death and the Black Lives Matter marches.
Yeah, I think it speaks a lot to, you know, the heart and the community and the things that people care about in this city when they're willing to step outside of their individual lanes, whether it's sports or whatever walk of life they feel they come from, you know, to stand up for others when it counts.
And I have to agree with him that a great burger is a great way to wrap up a pretty cool day.
I would agree with that. And St. Jack's does have good burgers. I agree with him there. I think he's spot on for that one. Hopefully he can treat himself to a pretty nice hamburger this Saturday. Thorns are hosting Gotham FC in the NWSL Challenge Cup Championship game. Ian, I'm sure you have plans.
I will be watching it on television. I'm very excited to see it on television. It's going to be great to see some crowds back in there. I know we were going... there was a lot of back and forth this week about whether or not we'd have fans at the game or not have fans at the game. But it appears as though, at least as things stand right now, we are going to have fans at the game in some capacity. So that's really cool. But if you can't get to the game, or if you weren't fortunate enough to get a ticket to the game, big reminder that you can catch Coach Mark Parsons and the Thorns in that championship game. We're going to be televising it live Saturday at 10 on Coin 6. So that's where I will be catching the game. And it is definitely a big part of my weekend plans.
Well, have fun. I'm going to try and catch it at home as well. And I'm excited to cheer for our Thorns.
And hopefully by the end of the summer, we can get back to having something that looks a little bit more like full crowds at that stadium and bring that atmosphere that we all love so much.
It is still very much on my list to catch a game in Providence Park. So you better believe that as soon as a few more people can be allowed in there, I will definitely try to be among them.
Thank you very much, Emily.
Yeah, have a good weekend, Ian. Enjoy the game.
I will. You too.
The Coin 6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin 6 weather, watching out for you.
Vandalism, violence, and homelessness are spiraling out of control.
The city of roses is now the city of trash and filth.
The Portland that I see now is not the Portland that used to be.
City leaders and a shrinking police force seem overwhelmed.
The fact of the matter is we are underpoliced in the city of Portland.
Coin 6 is taking a hard look at how one of America's most desirable cities fell so fast.
And what it will take to recover.
Is Portland over? A Coin 6 special series, all next week at 6.